Welcome to episode 105 of the Kimberley IT podcast. Myself, James Kimberley, and Carl Heath.
Yes, indeed. Hi. Hello.
Hey, Carl. What are we talking about today? What's the topic of today's podcast?
Confidential emails.
Yeah, and a bit about confidentiality in general when you're sharing data. But let's start with confidential emails. And what are they, Carl? Tell everyone that so they know what they are and how they function.
I like a confidential email. It enables me to send an email from me to you, and I know that no one else can read that email. Not in transit, not when it arrives at your computer, unless it's you logged into that computer. That means I can share things that are sensitive. Bank details, username and password, perhaps. Maybe a conversation about an employee that we definitely wouldn't want anybody else to accidentally get access to. Maybe a PA or something. I like that very much because it enables privacy, and privacy is important.
And how this works in the Gmail version of confidential email is, rather than the email leaving your inbox, it's essentially a link to the email in your inbox for the other person to read the email, hence the reason that you're able to revoke an email. So you see emails come through where it says, this user has revoked the email, but that doesn't work. You can't do that. You can't take an email back from someone's email inbox in a standard sort of email, but you can with a confidential email because it is simply a link to a email that's remained in my inbox. It's basically giving you permission to see the email in my sent items, because if it's Gmail to Gmail, it's very native in that the recipient sees it inside the Gmail interface and it looks very much like a normal email. If I was to send it to someone who was using Outlook, they would have a link to click on to actually view the contents of the email.
Yeah, it opens up in a web browser. That's right. Yeah, another tab. Yeah.
But it does give that ability to be able to revoke an email. It's the only way you can actually revoke an email.
You mean in the case of when somebody says undo send? I guess you could, if you sent everything as a confidential email, then technically you could actually undo a drunken rant or some such if you'd done that.
Yeah, or you could just do what a confidential email does great is set a limit on how long that email is available for. So you could send a drunken rant and set it for one day so it automatically vanishes after one day and the person can't see it.
Yeah, that's right. Gmail has 1 day, 1 week, 1 month, 3 months. You can't specify exactly, but it has a breakdown, doesn't it, of a various... Yeah, I tend to use a week or a month, depending on what it is. Usually a week would... Or I guess I might even use a day for something.
Well, I do... If it's something like a password or something like that, I will normally set that to expire in 1 day because there's no need for someone to have that there. Then you've got expires in 1 week, 1 month, 3 months, or 5 years are the options.
5 years, yeah.
And what you do also have is the ability to use an SMS passcode. And now this is handy because when you're sending an email to somebody, say it's a director of a company, you don't know if they've given access to their email inbox to an assistant. And this might be some really confidential information you're sending over. So if I was set to send the email over without a password, that assistant could actually see the email because they have access to the inbox. But if I put a passcode on it and entered the director's mobile number, that assistant would also need to have access to the mobile number to get the PIN to then be able to decrypt and view the message.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to do that. I like as well with a confidential email, the ability that the person you're sending it to can't then disseminate it elsewhere. Because normally if I send you an email, you could forward that on to everybody else, show everybody else, do whatever you want with it. But with confidential email, I've sent it to people. I've gone, oh, I can't copy and paste out of it. No, you can't. I can't print it. No. And if you forward it to someone else, even your own personal email or another company email address to a colleague, they can't open it. It's only for the person who gets it. And that's what's important about it. It enables you to realize that you're bringing a level of confidentiality to email that doesn't exist in the real world of email. The real world of email is actually it's not confidential at all. It's very open. You can just do what you want with it. And this brings it down to a one-to-one conversation, which is probably more like what you thought it was in the first place, to be honest.
And there is one thing with that. Of course, someone can always take a photo of the screen and get it that way. However, when it comes down to it, it doesn't look like that idea passes many people's brains to think about doing that, because they'll often say, oh, I can't access it anymore, I can't afford it, or anything like that. They don't seem to take a copy of it on a photo. It's always possible, but it doesn't seem like it's something that someone automatically thinks.
You've given that away now.
I know everyone's going to do it from now on, take photos of confidential emails and make it redundant.
But... Well, the question does arise, doesn't it, with phones and confidentiality. Will there come a point in the workplace in which, I mean, working from home sort of destroys that you go, well, no cameras allowed. I guess you can't do that with work from home. It's impossible to do that. It's impossible to get away from that fact.
Yeah, it's always going to be very tricky because even if you supply somebody with a work phone, you could on an Android phone with MDM prevent the camera from being used, but they're still going to have their own personal phone.
Yes. So
you can never rule that out. There's always that thing. But as we said, the added security that confidential email does is far greater than just sending it in a plain text email, a plain normal email that's open to anyone, essentially.
That's right, because you don't know between you and whoever who can read it in transit. And although some email communications are encrypted as they go back and forward, there's plenty of points along the way in which they're not, in which they are just readable as information. And it's good practice within your business. It's a good practice to understand that there are confidential emails, that you can use these emails, that you have an option to say something to somebody else that can expire after a week's time or a month's time. You know, you shouldn't be necessarily sending over a copy of the accounts or something in a PDF. There's better ways to share data. However, you might want to say something briefly, the conversation around some bullet points, which is more acceptable in the email, and use it and then say, all right, this expires after next week. So I know that I don't have to worry about after next week, that's gone.
Yeah, this is one that's a good point here that you said was sharing specific data. So we did have a client that every so often they're using LastPass and they pay directly for that, but their credit cards had expired or they needed to buy some more licenses. And the person at the client, they wanted to have a phone call to hand over that data for me to enter in the new telephone, the new credit card number, the 3-digit number on the back and the expiry dates. And I said, actually, that's a really bad idea to do that, because what's going to happen is you're going to call me up and I'm going to write that down on a notepad on a piece of paper. And then you're relying on me to destroy that piece of paper afterwards in a secure manner, rather than just leaving your credit card details that are still valid lying around the place. But if you send it in a confidential email to me, send it for one day, so I can't view it after that one day. It's a bit more tricky for me because, as you said, I can't just cut and paste those numbers into a website. I have to manually type them in because that's removed. But that's far more secure than ringing up a company and giving them your credit card details, because they are definitely going to be writing them down somewhere and they're going to sit around for a while.
Oh, yeah, that definitely happens.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, I've seen that happen when supporting other companies in the past at desks for selling tickets and things like that. Without a doubt. I had one recently, Judge. I had to get a refund from a supplier. A very small amount of money, but nevertheless, I wanted the refund on it. And they said, send over your bank details. So I did in a confidential email. Oh, can you send it again normally? I can't forward that on. No, I can't. You can note what it is and tell them what it is. It's only a matter of 20 numbers. You know what I mean? It wasn't like War and Peace I'm sending you. But I'm not sending it again because you want to forward that onto the accounts department. You can do it yourself and tell them what it is.
Well, actually, I think you might have done that slightly wrong there, in that person would now write that down and then forward it on. I think you probably better would have said to say, tell you what, give me the account's email address and I'll send it directly to them if you don't need it. I'll send it, because that way you're keeping more control over it. Because at the moment, I suspect that guy would probably write it down, put it into a normal email and then forward it on.
Yeah, you're probably right with that one. I thought he was going to handle it and then he came back and said, no, I've got to pass it on to accounts and stuff. I suppose, yeah, I should have asked for that. Yeah, you're right. I should have asked for the accounts and sent it directly there to avoid that situation.
I had a similar problem where I was getting some share certificates reissued.
Yeah.
And it was one of the two things, I can't remember exactly what it was. So either they couldn't, the same reason they couldn't get the information with the confidential email, they wanted to copy and paste it and stuff like that. And the other option, which is quite common, was that their company, out of date, was blocking file sharing services. So I said, okay, I'll tell you what, you want a copy of my bank statement for ID purposes, fine. I'll share it and I'll share them with Google Drive, because once they've finished using it, I can then revoke their access. So I shared it with the ability not to download it, not to do anything like that. You just need to see it. And again, they came back to me, oh, we can't view that. We're not allowed to access Google Drive. They're blocked by our IT. And I said, I basically call them out on that. So I say, so you haven't got any decent security and you want me to send an attachment in a unprotected email to you with my financial details and my personal details on it. And how are you going to keep that protected? And whenever you do that, they can never come back with a decent response, because these people aren't, the people you're chatting to is just somebody who's doing their job and they haven't got the IT technology, and they've been let down badly by the company's IT for not filling in those gaps.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah. So, yeah, these are important things to understand, that there's the confidential availability in Gmail. And it's also available if you use Outlook as well. Because at this point in time, people do need to stay secure, despite the fact that I despise Outlook and had to work with it migrating a customer from Office 365 to Google Workspace over the last 2 weeks. So I still despise the product. However, it must be noted it is available in Office 365 as well, and you should use it.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that, because I actually put a post on LinkedIn, kind of going off topic here slightly, but it was about an email that went into someone's Gmail that was in spam. So naturally, they ultimately assumed, oh, their spam filter is played up. But it wasn't. It was the fact that the email was missing SPF.
Yes.
If a genuine email ends up in your email inbox, it will either be missing DKIM, SPF, or both. So it went into their inbox. And I put a post on LinkedIn, and one of the guys who commented it back said, did you know that on Office 365, you have to go through about 13 different admin panels to set up DKIM? And no wonder. IT support people who look after 365 don't do it.
Yeah.
While in Google Workspace, it's just one page that you go to set up DKIM, put it into the DNS, and it's set up. But that just shows like the weakness in these email systems. And
it makes it complicated to make someone actually want to do it. Yeah, it does need to be simple. Yeah, it is straightforward, really easy to do in Google Workspace. You click a button to generate a key, copy two lines, where really one you don't need to copy, and you put it into DNS and you're done, and click a button to start.
Yeah, I was amazed. It was 13 different admin panels you have to go through, and you know a lot about that because of your migrating from 365 to Google Workspace. Convoluted the admin panels are, and settings all over the place.
You just get lost in a changing portals and stuff like that. So that should be easier for people to implement. This stuff should be like almost one click. It should be that easy for people to be able to do. You can do it in the background for them, and so that people can implement this stuff.
It shouldn't be that for an email system that two protocols, SPF and DKIM, that have been around for such a long time, SPF 1974, DKIM 2004, are so difficult to deploy on a Office 365 setup. It should be easy and simple to do, so that emails generally around the world are more secure and can be authenticated better.
Well, the amount of times I check anybody who's using Office 365 to see whether they're using DKIM, it's very, very few. In fact, sometimes I thought, James, that I didn't know if I could do the test online, because I thought I'm missing something. Every time I test anybody, it fails. So I must be doing something wrong. They can't all not be doing it. And then I found one company that had got it with the details that I thought was correct. So it actually shows that hardly anybody's using it in Office 365. I found one place that did. Yeah, crackers. And it's probably partly from what you've just said. It's so difficult to implement that it's not done. And that's no surprise that then people won't be using confidential emails in their products. And this just shows how little security is thought about by the general populace. And unfortunately for us, it's massively considered by the criminal and rogue states of the world. Massively. They're all over this stuff. And we're just like blasé.
Yeah, and again, it's going back to one of our favorite topics about regulation, in that there's no regulation in industry or the IT world where these things that have been around for such a long time that add massive security are mandatory and have to be deployed.
Yeah, you would think with email, wouldn't you, that it would be mandatory to have those three setups in place for you to be able to trade as a business, or it must be part of the limited company rule or so. I don't know. Like I said, how do you enforce it? As we've discussed in the past, you can't. It's always retrospective. It's always going to be punishment, isn't it, rather than deterrent?
Yeah, and again, the punishments aren't great enough. ICO does not punish businesses, small businesses.
Actually,
it goes after big ones, but it's only a tiny amount of money.
Here's an interesting thought, James, although it'd be difficult to do at present because of the international nature, but if you've got kylesgarage.co.uk, and that's a brand name and domain, technically the punishment for non-set domain is internet. Now that can be done. It can be suspended because there is an international body that takes care of that, and there's a UK body that takes care of it. I mean, that's one way you could do it. If you took someone's domain offline, so no web presence, no email, that would really hurt people hard.
Yeah, it's quite easy actually to prove if they're using email or not, because you just check if they've got any MX records. And if you've got MX records and you've got these things missing, then your domain automatically gets suspended by your host until you have these things.
Oh, even better. Yeah, even better. Like an automated. Yeah, it can't operate as an MX-based email system unless these other records are supported. That's it.
You could quite easily automate that as well. I think I've come up with an idea. I think I need to go and register that and patent it and get it deployed. Well, it's a domains.
It's a great idea, James. And all it would take there is collectively the big organizations that provide email services all enforcing that rule that says, sorry, you can't run a domain in Google unless this is in place. It just won't work. It won't allow it.
Yeah, it's just a mandatory function that has to be in there for an email system to work.
Yeah, that's it. Instead of saying it's a choice, you may add extra security if you want. It should be just mandatory from Microsoft to Google and some of the other big, small players, you know, IONOS and 1&1 and all those people. If they all did that, we might actually start getting somewhere.
There you go. I didn't think we were going to solve the email problem. Well, we haven't, but we've given an idea for the world of what they could do to solve this problem.
You should send that one to old Troy, see what he thinks. Should tweet him on that one. Have you thought of this one? Why hasn't it happened, Troy? Because maybe the other people go, we've all thought of this, James, and this is why it didn't, except for... But, you know.
I will do that. I will send a treat to Troy Hunt.
He might see what he says. Yeah, you never know.
I think that's a good place to round up before we descend and lower the quality of this podcast.
Yes. Right. Okay.
So we'll speak to everybody next week.
Yeah, I'll see you next time, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.